Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And I'm here with Mike, my broadcast engineer and sidekick. Good evening, Mike.
Good evening, Andy.
And the Redskins have won a game, Mike.
Finally.
Gee, it took a while.
Against the lowly Texans.
No, don't say that. They got one more win than the Texans have. But you're right, they were both 0-2, right?
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they scored a lot of points.
They did. If you're going to play a lowly team like the Texans, you need to put at least 30 points.
Yeah, you don't want to win that 7-0.
Absolutely. Portis is back. So, yeah, things are looking pretty good. And my 8-year-old stepson's team also won, so they're now 2-0.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, the date is Monday, September 25th, 2006. And, you know, I hate to do this every week, but we've got more in the world of politics. And I'm going to save the politics like I did last week for the second half of the show. It's bashing the current president is turned into as much sport as shooting fish in a barrel. It's gotten too easy. And so I almost feel bad about it. You notice I said almost. But I do want to start someplace else. There was a very interesting article in the Washington Post last Friday. And it's about plagiarism among students. That is, students that copy or cut and paste term papers or borrow them from someone else in their high school or college fraternity or someplace. And it was a little bit of a twist on this whole issue because it's about a database designed to thwart copying. So there's a service called Turnitin, and you can go to their website. It's called turnitin.com. And what they do is they collect fees from colleges, universities, and high schools, and they have thousands of them signed up, something like 4,300 schools signed up, and they get hefty fees from all these. And once you pay the fee, any of your teachers can submit papers in electronic form and test to see if that paper has been plagiarized. That is, if people have copied or cut and pasted material and catch students that cheat. All in all, sounds like a fair way to go, because the problem is there's always been cheating and you don't really know how to stop it. With the advent of the World Wide Web and all this content out there, students find it irresistible sometimes to go out and, you know, they're doing some research on a topic. Right, so they go out to Wikipedia, they go out to some website, and they say, oh, this is a good explanation of this issue of Shakespeare, of physics, of it's a good primer on economics, whatever it is. They cut and paste some of it, copy it down to a Word file, and say, I want to remember this for later when I write the paper. And then when they go to write the paper, they say, gee, you know, I don't think I can improve on this. Maybe I'll just cut and paste this into my paper. And They're working on a deadline. They need to pull an all-nighter. Instead of writing the paper, they pull a half-nighter, and they cut and paste it and reformat it and turn it in. Hence the name of the website, turnitin.com. Now, the twist here is that there are students at McLean High School right here in Virginia who have signed a petition and are revolting against the use of Turnitin, because here's what happens. For instance, George Mason, where I teach, has a contract with Turnitin. And if I want to check my students' papers, I don't really assign papers in most of my courses, not things they can plagiarize. I have other assignments I know how to assign that they are pretty hard to copy. But if I wanted to test them, I take the electronic version of the assignment, and I can run it against Turnitin. The problem is the agreement with Turnitin.com allows them to hold on to the papers. So they add my students' papers to the database of papers they have. And they're assembling this database. They have over 1 million papers now. And what's happening is the students at McLean say, wait a minute, that is our intellectual property. We own the copyright to that paper we wrote. you know, a lot of these papers were not plagiarized. They're legitimate, original works. And while they may never be bestsellers, the students own the copyright to it. So they're saying the school doesn't have permission to give it to Turnitin, and Turnitin doesn't have permission to keep it in their database. Turnitin's position is, we're not doing anything with these papers. We're not distributing them. Nobody's reading them. We're keeping them in an electronic vault and just comparing other papers to it to see if anybody ever copies them. This will stop fraternities from taking the same paper year after year on Shakespeare and having a different student turn it in each year and getting the C or B or A or whatever it is. So very interesting issue. There's no case law on this yet, as far as I know. That is, the courts have not ruled on the copyright issues here. But I think this issue is fascinating because I have to deal with plagiarism all the time.
Have you encountered any blatant plagiarism in your years?
Sure. Before the World Wide Web, I won't say before the Internet because the Internet's been around since 69, but before the World Wide Web, when it was easy to get access to content online, the way I would catch a plagiarizer was the writing style was just too good to be an undergraduate student. And so you'd get this well-written article that you knew came out of a magazine or something, but you couldn't prove it. So I would call the student into my office and say to them, you know, this is unusually well written. In fact, the way it's written, bringing in these statistics or whatever it is, I said, I'm amazed. How did you have this command of this subject? And I don't accuse them of cheating, but most of them will just deny that, oh, I just happened to know or whatever. I did a lot of work. I stayed up late. But I knew that they had copied it, but there's no good way to catch them unless you can go online and find somebody else that had written the exact same words.
Any cases of you recognizing a particular piece of text or something and saying, aha?
Well, there's a great story, and most of these stories about colleges are actually urban legends, but one of the best urban legends about this, and every school, every kid that hears this will tell you, or every professor will swear that it happened at their school. Right? So when I was an undergraduate, the claim was that Father Murphy, this old priest who taught Shakespeare, got this paper turned in on Shakespeare, and he gave it an A. Well, a year or two later, he gets the same paper again, and he writes on the paper, I can't place it, but I believe I've seen this paper before, and he gives it a B. And the next time he says, I don't remember which student it was, but I've definitely seen this paper before. He gave it a C and said, if I see it again, it gets an F. And every student that's ever heard this will swear it happened at their university. It didn't happen at St. John Fisher College, where I went to school, but we believed at the time that it did.
Right. And that was enough to scare you.
Well, that's what they say. Anyway, but Shakespeare is the kind of thing where you can plagiarize. That is, if you're covering Macbeth, the topics are the same. You know, write a paper about analyzing the characters in Macbeth, or a character in Macbeth, or the lead character. And so these things, there are, you know, their 20-page papers were written 100 years ago, and you could still have a copy of one, certainly from 20 years ago. And so that's the dilemma, is how do you stop that? How do you get students to do their original work? Because it's not fair to the good students that work hard that somebody else turns in work they didn't do and gets an A or a B.
Yeah.
So that's the dilemma.
Hmm. So unfortunately, plagiarism is not in its last throes.
No, in fact, it is definitely not. And in fact, although the McLean students, the good students, were complaining that they're being essentially being accused of cheating, that is, teachers are running everything through Turnitin to check, they say, you're assuming we're not honest. And I have a problem with that. First of all, I wouldn't take all my student papers and run them through Turnitin. I will only take the ones after I've read them that I suspect. Because some of them I can tell. They're just not good enough to be plagiarized. Actually, they're not good enough to get a good grade. Maybe they were plagiarized from bad students.
Right.
But the other piece of this is that, you know, on an individual level, I trust every one of my students. If I look any one of my students in the eye or sit down with them, I don't assume they cheat. I assume they're honest. But that doesn't get you away from the statistics. When they do anonymous surveys of high school and college students, a tremendous percentage of them admit to having cheated, either cheated on a test or copied from a paper or cut and pasted information into a paper. And it's a ridiculously high number. It's gone up in recent years, too. We're talking 30 to 40 to 50 to 60%, depending on the survey and the
wow.
type of cheating.
Wow.
So it's rampant. And this is Turnitin.com is an attempt to get a handle on this. An interesting debate, and not worth another 10 minutes. This is enough on that. couple of interesting research articles are out here, Mike. Listen to this one. In the Journal of Socioeconomics this year, the title of the article is Church Organists Analyzing Their Willingness to Play. And it turns out that these British economists determined that church organists are, their willingness to play for the church has more to do with the size of the church choir and the quality of the instrument, the quality of the organ, than with how much they were paid.
Hmm.
Now, boring at one level, but I would have thought when you start talking about the size of the choir and the quality of the instrument, that somewhere in there, the size of the organ would have come into play, but it didn't. The second study is quality time, the effects of birth order. Now, there's a lot of literature on birth order. My degrees are in psychology, and so you had to study that whole birth order literature stuff. And there's some interesting findings if you're sitting around dealing with boring academics. But a Cornell University researcher found that parents spend more than 20 minutes more per day reading or playing with their firstborn children than they do with secondborn children at the same age. Now, does that surprise you at all?
No, not really.
Me either. Think about pictures. Now, there were 8 kids in my family. Firstborn always get the primo stuff. You go to any family album and look at the number of pictures of children. There's always about 5 times as many pictures of the firstborn child than there are of the later children. Because there's a fascination with your first child. And so you take all kinds of pictures. You buy you get the booties bronzed, at least you did in the old days, all those things for the firstborn. My parents get down to the 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th child. Hey, man, you're lucky if they take any pictures.
Hey, just another mouth to feed.
That's right. You say, oh, how come there aren't any pictures of me as a child? Well, we kind of had it up to here with kids by then.
Yeah, we couldn't afford film.
That's right.
Too busy buying milk.
Right. So that doesn't surprise me.
No,
but
no.
It's an interesting issue, that issue of how firstborn are treated. Did you know that a statistically higher than expected number of our U.S. presidents are firstborn children?
Hmm.
And that's because firstborns also tend to have higher IQs. And it would be boring to go into the explanation of why, but there's actually a good explanation for why. Actually, I can do it in just 30 seconds. IQ has something to do with the environment you're raised in. So if you're the firstborn, you're raised with 2 adults. So you have 2 adult minds and 1 child mind, making the child reasonably smart. But as soon as you add a second child, you got 2 adults and the older child mucking things up. Exactly.
Yeah.
And when you have 3 children, it gets worse. So I'm 6th out of 8, and I'm not really very bright because of that.
You're too modest.
The third study, I think, is funny. This is the title of it, In Evolution and Human Behavior, and it's beginning to make me doubt evolution. The title of the article is My Baby Doesn't Smell as Bad as Yours, The Plasticity of Disgust. See, this is why academics have a bad name, is they write this kind of macaca. And basically, psychologists in the U.S. and in Australia found that mothers believe that their own baby's soiled diapers don't smell as bad as those of someone else's babies. Now, I don't want to know who they sat down and how they sat them down to sniff diapers, but this is what gives professors and academics a bad name.
Yeah, I mean, they all pretty much stink. But that being said, if my own baby pukes on my shoulder while I'm burping him, no big deal. You wipe it off.
But if somebody I puked on your shoulder?
Yeah, if Andy Finn pukes on my shoulder, wow, that's a whole other animal right there. I'm probably puking myself. And
that'd be a serious animal.
Yeah.
It's not good.
No.
Now, there was a writer in Turkey who has been acquitted. She was being tried for insulting Turkishness. And this story didn't make a lot of news, but it was the end of last week, and I knew that this was going on. So in Turkey, it's the opposite of the law in Germany. In Germany, you may know that you cannot deny the Holocaust. The president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, at the UN last week complained, how come it's not okay to question the Holocaust? Well, Germans have come to grips with this and said, to be in denial about the truth is essentially being racist. So we will not allow you to deny that Hitler killed 6 million Jews, right? Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is in denial about that, the president of Iran. In Turkey, they have a different issue. In 1915, the Turks wiped out huge populations of Armenians. And Armenians, descendants of these Armenians, consider it a genocide. I don't know if they wiped out, I'll say, 115,000 people. 85,000, I forgot the number. But Turkey has never recognized it as a genocide. They treated it as a civil war, a situation at war. And there's a law in Turkey that you cannot claim it was a genocide. So anytime somebody writes about it and refers to it as a wrong or as a genocide, you can be hauled into Turkish court. So in the one case, you can't deny genocide in Germany that did take place. Here, you can't say that it did take place because they have never admitted to it.
I'm more willing to abide by the Turkish law because I certainly don't want to end up in one of those Turkish prisons.
No. Now, are those run by the CIA or are those run by somebody else?
Very funny.
When we come back, I want to talk about something else non-political. I want to talk about a proposal to get rid of the penny.